You're listening to Sports Connections with David Smale, the show that brings you a fun and intimate look into connections throughout sports. Now here's your host, David Smale.
On February 7th, 2021, Sarah Thomas became the first female to officiate in a Super Bowl. She's been officiating in the NFL since 2015, but she's been a trailblazer her whole life. She was the only girl on boys sports teams growing up most of the time as a youth. She even got voted out of an adult men's church basketball league after they discovered that she is a woman after 3 years. The response she received regarding the Super Bowl from players, coaches, and even fans has been mostly positive. Not everyone thinks pro football official is a place for a woman, but Sarah takes it all in stride, and she has a great sense of humor. We'll talk about her response to some of the hype here in just a second. So Sarah, welcome to Sports Connections.
Hi, thanks for having me, David.
All right, so just tell me a little bit about your sports background. I understand you grew up with brothers. Just talk about how you got involved in sports.
Sure. Yes, I have an older brother and a younger brother, but sports is just a part of my family. My mom and dad played sports. You know, their brothers and sisters played sports. My grandparents did. And we just had that support from my entire family, no matter what season it was, whether I was playing softball, my brother's playing baseball, football, basketball, we were just involved in some type of sporting event my entire life. How I actually got involved in basketball, my mom's oldest sister, Jill Upton, she won the first women's national title in 1971, NCAA college women's title. That granted her the honor to coach the U.S. world team that went to Moscow, Russia in 1973. Well, I come along, I'm in fifth grade, I'm tall for my age, and she just said, Sarah, are you going to play basketball? I said, they don't have a girls team. And she said, go out for the boys. And so I did, which is crazy. That was in the early 80s. And just for her to be forward thinking that way. And so that's how I got started in basketball. I played softball and basketball my entire youth and through high school. And then, of course, played college basketball at the University of Mobile.
Okay. Now, you played on boys teams mostly, or was it mostly pickup or a combination?
So when I first started playing basketball for 3 years, my fifth, sixth, and seventh grade, I played in the boys' league on the boys' team.
Okay.
Then when I went on and played in junior high or middle school, they did have a females league team. And so I played eighth and ninth grade for the middle school. And then our high school was 10th through 12th. And then I did play in college on a women's team, of course.
Right.
But yeah, during that time was pickup ball with the guys. And then after college, I did play in the men's church league.
Okay, and just talk about the difficulty, maybe difficulty is not the right word, but the experience of playing probably against all boys. Maybe there might have been another girl in there or not, I don't know, but it probably made you a tougher basketball player, but it certainly developed your game. But just what was that like playing against very few, if any, other people like you?
Right. So there was one girl, Carmen Ferris, and I believe she got into the league the next season.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, I was that rough and tough. I used to call myself a tomboy. My mom says I'm a girly girl, but I think I'm a blend of both. But I just always played with the boys, having brothers. Our neighborhood that I grew up in was predominantly guys. I mean, you know, rock fights, playing in the dirt hills. I just did all that with my brothers. And so me playing in the boys' league, it just didn't intimidate me. I know it made me a better player for sure and definitely tougher. And so I thanks, guys, I mean, for having me and letting me play. But yes, it definitely made me tougher. But David, I promise you, I'd never looked at my gender, even back then, like, oh, well, I'm a girl. That's the reason they're not letting me do this. I just didn't have that mentality.
My mom is the oldest of five brothers, the oldest of six kids, five brothers. And she remembers when she was about 15 or 16, one of her brothers insulted her and said, you throw like a girl. And she finally went, wait a minute. I am a girl, but playing with the boys, two of her brothers have been involved in professional sports. They're basically their whole adult lives as agents. She brags to the five brothers that she's the only one who got an athletic scholarship. She played college basketball at Phillips University in Oklahoma. So how did your parents playing sports influence you?
I think that both of my parents being involved in sports, my mom was a basketball player, my dad was a baseball player, and just what athletics and sports instills in individuals outside of the home is the one line of discipline that they're not getting here. And it's just, they knew, I believe from their growing up and being involved in sports helped molded me. And you can't make excuses. Don't quit once you start. We won't allow you to. And I'm so glad they instilled that in me. And just dig deep. If a coach is on your tail, that means he likes you and there's something you have to offer. It's when he stops talking to you that you're in trouble.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Now, often you were the only girl on the team. Did you think about organizing girls' team, or was it just easier to do what you've been doing your whole childhood and just play with the boys?
I wished I was that smart or I had that desire to do something like that. No, I didn't. But I do remember when I was in the sixth grade, you were supposed to go to the A team. But the coach said, because I was a girl, I couldn't be on the A team. And I believe it was in the rules that way. And my dad did talk with the recreational department head after he had gotten all over the coach for what he said. But then they created a girls league there in Pascagoula. So when I went on to the eighth grade to middle school, Pascagoula formed its first Pee Wee League for girls.
By the way, I love your accent. You probably think I'm the one with the accent, but the names of some of the towns in Mississippi, this is totally off script, but Pascagoula, Mississippi. And I recognize it's not Mississippi, it's Mississippi. It's only like three syllables.
Mississippi. That's right.
Okay. And so I love that. So Pascagoula, Mississippi. So anyway,
I love it.
How did your two brothers support your efforts to be competitive?
Because I would whip them. My younger brother was just a stud football player. And unfortunately, he really damaged his shoulder his senior year of high school. But my older brother, Lee, was a soccer player and he played football. But I would hang in there with them. Funny story is me saying that the neighborhood was boys. My younger brother was laughing and he goes, "Sis," he said, "don't you remember that time when the neighbor came over and you were going to whip him because he was picking on my younger brother?" And then the guy's daddy came over and said, "Hey, you don't need to let your daughter beat up my son." And I think they just knew I could hold my own. That's it. I really could.
That's hilarious. All right. So talk about your college career. How good were you at University of Mobile?
David, I only played it was Mobile College when I first went and then became University of Mobile my junior, senior year. But I only played there 3 years. I went to the W my freshman year. That was in Columbus, Mississippi. And then I transferred. And it's crazy when you're in school. I wasn't thinking about the points I'd scored or rebounds or anything like that. But I believe I've read that I'm right close to 800 points in 3 years. And I believe I'm still in the top five in steals, all-time school record of steals. So that blows my mind. I wish I'd have played my fourth year there, or at least all four.
Yeah. Now the WNBA was not around then, if I'm correct. Could you have played if it had been around?
Sure. I want to believe I could. I was going to go and try out actually April and I broke my leg. Let's see, when I was 23. So this has been 2 years after. They had a tryout in Atlanta and me and Shell from Gulfport, we were going to go and try out, but I couldn't.
Okay.
Maybe that was God's way of just saying, "I don't want you to humiliate yourself. Let's just stay home."
Okay. And then this story, when you told me this recently, this story just cracked me up. After graduation from college, you still had that competitive urge. So you played in a men's church league. And you got voted out after playing for 3 years because they discovered that you're a female. Tell that story.
I don't know if that's good or not, David. I mean, I want to say I still had long blonde hair and put makeup on. Yeah. So this was actually the second league I played in. I played in another church league, men's league with my brothers and that team. And so we were like, let's just play in this other one. So we were playing all the time, but it had been 3 years and I was at a volleyball game because if it was a sport during my years after college, I still wanted to be involved. And a guy came up to me and he said, "Hey, Sarah, I'm sorry about what happened last night." And I just was going, "All right, I'm single, 23. I was by myself. What are you talking about?" And he started laughing and he said, "You don't know, do you?" And I said, "No." And he said, "They voted you out of the league." I said, "For what?" And he said, "Because you're a woman." And that's when I was like, are they just now realizing I'm a female? I've been in this league for 3 years. And so then I said, being that it's a church league, surely we had a vote. Somebody from the team was there. And he said, yeah. "No, there wasn't." And I wasn't like, "Oh, I'm going to show them" or anything like that. I was like, "Well, we got to have a fair shake. That's yeah. that's not fair." And my teammates were upset. And so we had a revote and it came down to a tie. And the tiebreaker was the preacher. And there were these two brothers that played on another team. And I know I've played sports my whole life and you know, you may run into a couple of dirty players. Well, they were just dirty and yeah. they would try to hurt me. And this is when my brother would go, "Hey, I'm going to go and do so-and-so to them." And I was like, "No, just give me the ball. Let me like shoot over them. Let me dribble by them. Let me post them up. Just give me the ball."
Yeah.
And so they would. And sure enough, the preacher asked one of them, and David, I don't know who they are, but I'm sure they remember who I am. He asked him, he said, "Why don't you want her in the league?" And he said, "Well," he said, "it's just when she posts us up or, you know, we post her up, it feels funny." And so I went, "You know what? I'm about to say this and then you can say whether or not I'm still in this league." And so I looked at these guys and I said, "As fast paced of a game as basketball is, if you get some type of sexual sensation out of it, you don't need to be in this league." And so, you know, I said sexual sensation in the Baptist gymnasium, I'm done. I'm history.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was livid. I was so mad. I left. I called my dad. I mean, I was crying, mad at the world, like, because I'm a girl, I can't play. This is ridiculous. I've been playing. What am I going to do? For first time in my life, I don't have a sport to be involved in.
Wow. That's just, you know, if that had been, and that was 25 years ago, right?
I'm really not that old. I was playing when I was 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Post-college career when you were 10. Yeah. that's good. But anyway, I know that it was about 25 years ago. Give or take a decade or two. It's been a while, but today that would just be all over ESPN.
And you're right.
For good reason. Because, sure. You know, I consider myself a chauvinist, not because I think I'm better than a female. I think women should be put on a pedestal. I hold the door for my wife every time we go in and out of the house. I hold the door for her to get in and out of the car. You know, if a total stranger, I'm walking into the grocery store at the same time and there's a female coming, I'll stop and I'll wait. So
David, do you have a single son?
No, I've got two kids and they're both married, but, you know, so I think I'm a chauvinist, maybe that's got a bad connotation, but I think there is a difference between male and female, but the opportunities shouldn't be different. What's going on? What went on with the NCAA tournament where the men had weight rooms filling up a ballroom and the gals had a set of weights was ridiculous. It was, yeah. They say it was an oversight and it got corrected. Good for them, but it should never have come up. My point is that had this happened a number of years ago, those guys would have been raked over the coals. They probably moved on and said, "Well, we got that problem solved." And it probably had nothing to do with the fact that you're a beautiful woman. It's probably the fact they were embarrassed by getting beaten by a woman.
That's guessing, real motivation. Yeah. And you know what, David, I would not call you a chauvinist. I would call you a gentleman, a respectful human being. And you're a wonderful man for doing those things. I would not call you a chauvinist at all. I just call you a respectful gentleman.
Okay. You could have fought that. Well, thank you, by the way. You could have fought that. You could have, you know, called the elders in, things like that. But instead, you found another outlet and talk about how you found officiating and how that fulfilled the competitive drive in you.
Yeah. So after I was kicked out of the league, I guess it was a couple of months. I don't know the exact time frame, but I was on the phone with my older brother Lee, and I just said, "Hey, what are you doing this evening?" And he said he was going to a football officials meeting, and I didn't even know Lee was doing that. And so then I just said, "Can girls do that?" And he said, "I guess so, sis. Be there at 6 and don't be late." You know, maybe he was hoping that I got kicked out of the league, I wouldn't be tagging along with him anymore. But so I meet my brother at this meeting, and I was a little early, and I had just come from the gym, and he stopped me right before we walked in, David, which kind of startled me because my brother's never defended me or took up for me. And he just said, "Hey, look, sis," he said, "these are a bunch of old men set in their ways. You are going to get some strange stares."
Yeah.
And I said, "I can handle them." And so we walked in, and sure enough, at the front, George Nash, he's 82 probably this year, a huge mentor to me, was the first gentleman that spoke to me. And he just, when I walked in, he literally stopped talking to another official and just watched me walk across the room. And I looked at him to break the ice, and I said, "Is this where you become a football referee?" I'm sure I said, and I can't repeat what he said. And then he said, "I guess so." And so I sat there and just thought, "You've got to be kidding me." I mean, you usually think that they just grab 5 guys off the street and give them some striped shirts and, "Hey, yeah, survive 4 quarters and run." as you know, as crucial as we can be of the officials, because I hated the officials when I played.
Yeah.
So I was so intrigued, David. They were actually challenging each other, going over rules, play scenarios, what-if situations. And I just thought they take a lot of pride in what they're doing. And if I, as an athlete, knew that that was happening, my mindset probably would have changed. Then the competitive juices started flowing, and the fact that I had no idea what I had gotten myself into. The game of football. Okay, I think I know what holding is, but they were talking about all kind of things I didn't know. I didn't even know that the numbers on the jerseys meant something. I didn't know that there was 11 on 11 or the requirement on the line of scrimmage. You had to have X number of players on the line of scrimmage. So that challenge, and once I start something, I'm not going to quit it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so here I go. That's how it started.
You started in high school and then worked your way up to college. Just talk about the early years in high school. Did you get a lot of pushback? You know, did it go smoothly?
Yeah, David, you know, I didn't think I got pushback, but I stayed on the clock for 3 years. I believe my brother did too. But I look back after I had gone through 10 years of high school, and there were guys that would get in and they would work a game, a varsity game their first year, or just work the clock 1 year. And so I really, truly just don't know if they knew what to do with me.
Yeah.
And so I worked on the clock for 3 years, and then I moved to Jackson, Mississippi area, and I worked my first varsity game my 4th season.
Okay.
And that was great. I got in with a great crew, because here in Mid Mississippi, they work in crews, where on the coast, they didn't in Pass Point. It was a good old boy system down there. Yeah. Here it's crews. But I worked those 10 years, but I had 2 kids in between. So actually, I really only had 5 years of experience varsity when I got hired in Conference USA, because 3 years on the clock, 2 pregnancies. Yeah, and I would not say I got pushback. If it hadn't been for George Nash, now I know he was a little colorful in what he said to me initially when I walked into that first meeting, but I'm telling you, he didn't sugarcoat. He did not look at me as like a female, but he said that some of the guys were a little concerned. Like, what is she doing here? And he just said, "Look here, fellas, she's a lot younger than we are, a lot better looking than we are. Her eyesight's got to be better. She's definitely in better shape than we are. Why wouldn't we let her work?" And so that just, if he hadn't have done that, and that leadership, and that's why it matters so much, a good leader and what they say and the direction they want to take it.
Okay. And then you got hired to do college, Conference USA. Just talk about that transition.
Yeah. So I thought my last game in high school was going to be a state championship game, but there was an NFL scout there. I didn't even know these people existed. They were scouting officials. And there was a play that happened, David, and the scout called me and he said, "It wasn't that you got the call right. It was just your field presence and how you handle the situation. It was a first down, the chains moved, but I had a flag on the ground." And so I, when he called me and told me that, he said, I think you've got what it takes to go to the next level. And I didn't know what level that was because the Junior College Association here in Mississippi said they would never hire me because I was a woman. So whenever Gerald Alston called me, he hired me over the phone. And I joke with Gerald and I go, I know you were old, but senile too. I mean, you're making history, hired the first woman, and you don't even know what I look like or if I can work. And he just told me, David, he said, there's never been an official that Joe Haynes has sent to me that wasn't able to work. And he said, you answered a question. Honestly, you didn't make an excuse. You didn't lie about it. So I knew your character was in check and you could be coachable. But do you know, David, he listed me in the roster of officials as S.B. Thomas in 2007 because he had not told the commissioner he had hired a female. Now, I knew who S.B. Thomas was. No one else did, but I did.
Right.
And when he went to the commissioner, he said that he had hired a female and he was like, what are you going to do with her? And he said, she's going to work on the field. He'd already contacted two colleges and they were fine with it.
That's cool. And how long did you do college before you got on with the NFL?
Well, the joke is, was it seven seasons or eight seasons? I believe eight because I got hired in 2007 and then I was in the league 2015, but I had a pregnancy during that time. That's when Bailey came along, a little surprise, and everybody thought that my career was going to be over. I remember when I called Gerald March, April of 2012, and I was like, Gerald, I need to tell you something. He's like, what is it? And I said, I'm pregnant. And he said, with what? And I was like, I don't know. I don't know if it's a girl or a boy, but I'm pregnant. And
it isn't a football.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? I was working in arena ball, David. And he said, all right, let's just give it some time. I'll let them know that you're not going to be able to work the next two games because you have a high ankle sprain. And I was like, Gerald, it's going to swell up around my belly. I cannot lie that I'm pregnant. Yeah, so I worked there, I guess, eight seasons, and then the NFL hired me April the 8th of 2015.
So as you look back, obviously, you made the official or made the Super Bowl, so you've done a good job. But as you look back, how would you say your years as an NFL official have gone?
Big learning curve. It just the and adapting to the speed and agility. And that was a big concern of some of the supervisors that had worked in the NFL, of course, was can she, you know, hold up and officiate the speed and agility of the Power Five players that primarily make up the NFL because Conference USA is considered mid-level. And so that was something that I had to get adjusted to. And then I've even told my daughter, she quoted it the other day. She said, Mom, do you remember when you told me you was the worst official in the NFL? And she goes, but when you work the Super Bowl, that means you're the best official in the NFL. But yeah, it was that rookie season, just want to fly under the radar, getting adapted to a lot of things. That second year, you could just tell I wasn't where I wanted to be. And the graders and our coaches and supervisors, I mean, they'll hammer you and rightfully mm-hmm. so. Mm-hmm. And I probably was a little too technical on some things and just is, can you make the adjustments to not being too technical? And that third season, I got a playoff assignment as an alternate. And then my fourth season, when Ron Tolbert called me and said, hey, congratulations, you've got a playoff game, the Chargers at New England. And I said, am I an alternate or am I on the field? And he said, you're on the field. So it's just about growing, and this year will be no different, David, in preparation. I want to finish number one, even though I won't be eligible for the Super Bowl. But I want to train for that.
I got to know Gene Steratore recently. A fun guy, I'll tell you what. I had so much fun interviewing him for the podcast. And he talked about one of the hardest things to learn is the difference between the – you know, both in college football or both in football and basketball, the difference between the X's and O's, the rules and the interpretation and having a human element to it. Was that the hardest part for you?
Absolutely. But thank goodness Gerald Alston he trained us that way. That is how he did. And I'll tell you this, my high school white hat, Larry Tucker said, yep, there are rules in place, but don't ever let the rules screw up a really good game. And the fact of the spirit of the rule, and Gerald would just say the speed limit could be 55. And if you get pulled over doing 57, you know, you're just really not that happy, but technically you're breaking the rule.
Right.
And it's once you get to that 65 or 60 is when we start the interpretation, how it should be. Let the game just play out. And Gino is an amazing individual. Any fun?
Oh yeah. And it's, you hear it more in college basketball because the cameras are closer to the action, but you hear it some in pro football where the official says, hey, that's, I could call that holding, or, hey, you know, back up, you're offsides or whatever. It makes it more human. Is that why it's enjoyable?
Oh yeah. And I take it back to just my playing days, David. It's just, if an official would have like, hey, look, you're pushing it. And maybe they did, I just don't remember, but yeah, you'll see one of those tackles that, you know, they always want to kind of take a little step back, and we'll give them warnings, but we'll give that defensive end the same warning, the same grace, unless it's just egregious. And then that's right. When you're doing the speed limit of 50 miles over the, you know, the speed limit. Yeah.
For sure. Now you just worked the Super Bowl in February, the first woman to do that. The response has been positive, but do you see yourself as a trendsetter, or was it just you're an official? You're primarily a side judge. Is that correct?
I'm a line of scrimmage, a down judge.
Okay, a down judge. Mm-hmm. And that's your role in it with every crew, right? So you're judge based compared to other down judges. So do you see being selected to the Super Bowl as, hey, I've achieved the point where I'm one of the best, if not the best at that? Or do you see your role as, I'm a woman who's the first one to do this?
I don't see it as I'm a woman and the first one to do this. And I don't see it that I'm the best. I just believe that the ball bounces the right way, and the training and everything that we do, and the percentage between number one and number two of the ranking of officials from our grades is so small, David. So we're all elite at the line of scrimmage, the 17 down judges, all of us. And the ball just bounced my way, maybe a little bit more this year than it did in favor of someone else. But next year it could be just the opposite. So I will never just say I'm the best. I love what I'm doing. There's a passion for what I'm doing. And who couldn't imagine being on the football field with NFL players and the crew that I get to work with?
Yeah, for sure. I've actually stood on the sideline of a Super Bowl, working security through a friend of a friend of a friend. But I was there for the Patriots and the Carolina Panthers. And my responsibility was to run interference for the camera crew that was filming the Patriots coming in and out of the locker room before the game, at halftime and post game. But during the game, we didn't have a responsibility. I just stood there on the 20-yard line. I've still got that game taped. And there I am in the yellow jacket, you know, standing on the sideline. There's just something really cool. And to be part of it, not just, I mean, I got to stand there and observe and, you know, every once in a while scratch the back of my head, which meant I was waving to my wife. But, you know, you actually are part of the story there. That's just got to be the coolest thing ever, isn't it?
It's just so surreal. I fell in love with doing this, and it just shows hard work and dedication. There's a lot of sacrifices my poor kids have had to go through, and me too, but just that it just pays off, and it's a blessing. But I am so grateful that my kids have been able to be a part of this, and that my mom and dad are still living and they're pinching themselves going, all right, she did turn out all right, because I was that child.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's fun for them.
And we'll get to your family reaction here in just a second. I want to talk about your sense of humor. Obviously, we've discovered today that you can laugh about this. When we spoke before, you told me you hadn't heard about the speculation that was on Twitter that you would do well in the Super Bowl because women are good at telling men what they did wrong. Just talk about your reaction to that, and then we'll get to the other one.
Yeah, we are. We're very, very savvy and good at telling men when they've done wrong. Now, the bad thing is they usually don't listen to us. So that's probably why we keep having to remind them. I think I saw a meme that said, oh, yeah, she's going to throw something that happened, you know, from 3 years ago, throw a flag because of something happened 3 years ago. Well, it goes back to that whole statement. They don't listen to us the first time, so we have to bring it back up 3 years. Yeah. No, I think it's fun that people have a good time with it. It doesn't bother me at all.
Okay. And I want to read one. We talked about this one as well. This is a story in a satirical story in the Babylon Bee, a satirical online newspaper. And says, Sarah Thomas, the first female referee to officiate in a Super Bowl, threw a flag on a play in the second quarter, but refused to say what was wrong. Penalty on the offense. You know what? Never mind. It's fine, she said after throwing the flag on Tampa Bay. Wait, what did I do wrong? Asked Tom Brady indignantly. Nothing. I said it was fine, she said, folding her arms. Doesn't seem like it's fine. You threw a flag. She shrugged, turned away. No, it's totally fine. Go play football with your friends. It's fine. Play proceeded without any consequences, though she glared bitterly at Brady throughout the next few plays. Meanwhile, male referees displayed their toxic masculinity by awarding extra yards for players who exhibited unnecessary roughness and also giving them manly chest bump and right on, bro. I don't know.
That's hilarious. I have not heard that or seen that, but you know what's so funny, David, is yes, us women, we'll do that. Oh, never mind. Yes, you can go have a guy's trip and we won't say anything and we're furious, you know, by the time they get home. Look, I am the only sister in this fraternity, and I tell them sometimes they're worse than a bunch of women in how they act. I mean, you think it's just me. Those men will do the same thing. They'll be like, never mind. I'm not. Nope. Never mind. They do it too. No, my daughter, it was just last week and she did that. I was like, all right, what's wrong? She's like, nothing, never mind. It's not going to matter anyway. And I go, oh, no, we're not doing that. So yeah, I love all that stuff. It's somebody's got a good sense of humor too.
And you've got to be able to laugh about it. I mean, I'm sure the guys get ridiculed, you know, that when I've covered college football and basketball, I've covered the NFL, I've covered Major League Baseball, you know, when the officials, referees, umpires, whatever, make a call and the organist starts playing Three Blind Mice, you know, we laugh. You got to be able to laugh at yourself. Is that what helps you get past when maybe you know you've made a bad call or when one of the teams is just screaming at you?
Yeah, the thing is that there's always that one play in a game. Usually there's that one play, whether I was involved with it or another, or it's just a crew element. If one person on that crew, there's that one play, we all try to digest it and work through it. But yes, you know, the ones that matter, my crewmates, including replay, my supervisors, the coaches, the players on the field. And we all strive for that perfection of the game. And so that's what matters. And I will address them. And if it's something that I just didn't see the way that they saw it, I will say that, but I definitely will go back and dig. And there's been several times where coaches will say, Sarah, you were right. Or I approach them and go, hey, you were right. I went back and looked and, you know, I don't want to do, you know, just, yes, those are the people who matter. Not anybody else.
I'll bring up one more that doesn't have anything to do with the fact that you're female in this role, but there was a commercial, it was a Super Bowl commercial 4 or 5 years ago. And it shows the down judge standing on the sideline and the coach is just jabbering in his ear, like going crazy. And he's just standing there, just deadpan. And the announcer on the commercial is saying, boy, how does he take that? Where in the world did he develop that talent? And then they show him at home with his wife just jabbering at him. And finally she says, how come you never tell me you love me?
Uh-huh. And he's
sitting stone face. So you got to be able to put on an extra layer of skin to, you know, let the criticisms roll off and be able, and then also learn from them and be able to make yourself better. Don't you?
That's the biggest thing, David, is that no one's perfect out there on that field, players, coaches included. I mean, we're just not, it's a game and that's why you suit up. Right.
Yeah.
And it's just that, if you make a mistake, you don't want to keep repeating it. You want to learn and keep going.
Now, we talked about your competitive juices, and I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What about officiating? What is it about officiating that gets you pumped up? Whether it's walking through the tunnel, being on the field, whatever it is, what is it that gets you psyched about being?
It starts with as soon as I leave this house and knowing that I'm going to be able to go and be around these guys and just, They're set out to do the same thing I want to do. We want to administer athletic justice and try to get it right and not make any mistakes. I mean, but it's football. You started at such a low level of officiating, and now being one of the 121 in the NFL is just phenomenal. Walking through the tunnel, walking on that field, but there's so many moving parts to an NFL game, and being on the line of scrimmage, I'm involved in every bit of it. And that's just something I can't explain it, David. I'm a different animal out there, but I love being a part of the game. I just do.
Okay. And for those, I'm in Kansas City. Obviously, I'm wearing my Chiefs gear. I want to go back to a play. I'm sure you watched it. AFC Championship game following the 2018 season. Chiefs are ahead of the Patriots late in the game, and Dee Ford lines up offsides, this far offsides. And we've seen so many times where the end, you know, whether it's the wide receiver looks over at the official and say, am I legal? Or the defensive end will look over and the referee will just kind of nudge him back. People are still upset. It's only been 2.5 years, so I don't know why they would have gotten over it by now. Still upset that the official didn't move Dee Ford back, because on that play, the Chiefs intercepted Brady less than a minute ago. Patriots are out of timeouts.
Wow.
And they were up. So they would have won the game and gone to the Super Bowl, which means this past win would have been their third straight. Turns out they called the play, called the penalty. Brady leads him down to a touchdown. Then Mahomes leads him back down with less than a minute to a tying field goal. And of course the Patriots won in overtime. So my question is, I don't want you to pick on your fellow official. Should that official have said, hey, 55, back up?
Or, you know, Dave,
go ahead.
The biggest thing is all of us. And I haven't seen that play. I have heard about it. And that's just something, like, as officials, we don't really go in and pinpoint one play or one player or anything like that. But if an official throws a flag in that situation, then it's got to be egregious enough. Or maybe he has already warned that player or talked to that player. And we try to do preventive officiating, because we don't want to throw the 5 yarders and slow up the game, or and especially in a situation where there's a time crunch and it's a big play or a big call.
Right.
But a lot of times they will turn and point to us. But if it's a player that we've warned or we've talked to, or and they're just egregious, it doesn't matter. If we would call it in the first quarter, we'd call it in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. And what I remind a lot of people, we didn't see if he had lined up before and the side judge or the down judge had moved him back. We didn't see that. And I will maintain, it's not, the Chiefs didn't lose that game because of Dee Ford. They lost that game because they couldn't stop Tom Brady at all. So I try and tell people, don't blame Dee Ford. Yeah, he should have lined up onside, but they had plenty of other chances to win the game. So anyway, I don't want to get into criticizing.
My coaches always told us, because we'd leave a game and we may have lost by one, or, oh my gosh, if they hadn't called that penalty, they wouldn't have given them 2 shots at the free throw line. But he just always told us, he said, don't ever let a call determine the game.
Yeah.
Like, have a good enough lead. So.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about your family. We've shared a little bit about it. What do your kids think? And we'll start with your kids, and then I want to go to your brothers and your parents. What do your kids think about you being an NFL official?
All right. So I have a 17-year-old. He's 6'5", and he's a catcher. He's a junior in high school. And I will tell you, he loves the Instagram. And he just texted me one day and he said, Mom, you're the GOAT. And I love to hear that, son. But then I picked up the phone and I called him. I said, what are you talking about? And he said, well, you just are, Mom. It's like you and President Biden are the ones that are like the most popular right now on Instagram or Twitter. And then, but my oldest son is like, you see the fruits of your labor whenever he posted something on Instagram and just said that words could not express how proud he was of me, and just speechless and in awe of all the hard work that I've been through, and referenced me like the woman in Proverbs 31, which she's an amazing woman. And I'm not even close to that. But to see your children say stuff like that, and just, I love you, I'm proud of you, and knowing everything they've been through, me not being home, but hopefully I've been instilling in them the values that were instilled in me when my mom and dad were raising me. And then my daughter, you know, it's just special. She's special. She's a blessing. And she wrote me a letter and I found it in my suitcase on Super Bowl Sunday. And it was just as simple as, I hope you had a safe trip there, Mom. I'm so proud of you. I love you. And she's really proud.
Do you ever find them taking it for granted? I mean, the reason I ask that, I grew up with my dad working for TWA. When I was in second grade, we went to Greece for a week because we could, you know, we just took a week off of school and we flew and spent time in Greece. We toured where Paul met the Apostle Paul met the Roman tribunal in Corinth. You know, we were there and that brought a lot of scripture to life for me. And the next week I was in second grade, or went to, got home from school. And my mom asked my brother and me, he's 2 years older, did you guys share anything in show and tell? My brother said, no, I couldn't think of anything. And she looked at me thinking, at least I was the talkative one. I would share something. And I said, yeah, I shared something. She goes, really? What did you talk about? I said, I shared the dinosaur in my Fritos bag. So I took for granted the fact that we could fly anywhere we wanted. Do your kids take for granted the fact that Mom's on TV most Sundays and you're doing something that a lot of people would like to do?
Sure. I mean, they're kids. At times they definitely do, but I mean, they're typical kids. But David, I truly try to keep them grounded. My friends may say, oh, Sarah, you spoil them or whatever. But my oldest just the other day was like, hey, Mom, my birthday, you know, is coming up. Can we trade in my truck and get me an F-250? I went, no. And he said, why? I said, because it's just not happening. It's just not happening. But sure. I mean, they've been to 5 Super Bowls. I think Bailey, since she was age of 3, have been to the Super Bowls. But I keep it real here, David. I am their mom. I am their disciplinarian. I am the one that's checking their grades. And hey, have you brushed your teeth? Clean up after yourself. You know, I am their mom. I'm not a superstar. I'm their mom.
Yeah. All right. We'll come back to the last question is about your kids again. But what do your parents think of you being an NFL official? And then we'll last follow up with what do your brothers think?
Yeah. So my mom and dad are super proud. It took my mom a little bit longer adjusting to me being a woman away from home with all men and working football, because she really thought it would just be high school. And then whenever, you know, got married, had kids, and here I am traveling with Conference USA, with the boys being really small, she wasn't too high on it. I mean, she's a home economics major. She cooks and she can sew, and I cannot sew, and I do not like to cook. But there was some reservation with her. But then when she saw the atmosphere and the caliber of people I was around, even when I was traveling, and able to filter that to my children and kept it real when I was home, didn't bring the work home.
Yeah.
Then the support. And then of course my dad, I mean, he's just, he's an amazing guy. I get my grit from my father for sure. But he was all about it. And when he found out I was pregnant with Bailey, he was like, what are you going to do about football? And I'm like, is that all you're concerned about? But of course. And then I got hired in the NFL, and my mom and dad are my biggest fans outside of my kids. So for Super Bowl Sunday, my mom and dad wore referee jerseys. She said, because if you're supporting a team, you're going to wear their colors. And so they wore the black and white stripes. They tailgated because they weren't able to go to the Super Bowl because of COVID. But they think it's amazing, and they're very supportive.
Okay. Are your brothers jealous?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Are you
maybe,
sure?
maybe in the beginning when I got into college, and then my oldest brother got hired in Conference USA the year I got hired in the NFL. And it's not until you have that eye in the sky that really tells all, and then you watch yourself for the first time. He got a quick dose of humble pie and was able to then talk with me about certain things, because both of them, why do y'all do that? Or why is this? And I'm like, just wait. So when he got hired in Conference USA, and then my younger brother was in junior college here in Mississippi, and I will never forget, they said, hey, sis, we want to work on the field with you one day, all of us together. And I said, well, you better get hired in the NFL, because I don't plan on getting fired. But, yeah, I, Very supportive. Very supportive. They'll give me a hard time about certain things, but yeah, they're brothers.
Yeah, that's their role. Okay, last thing that I want to talk to you about. What do you want your kids to learn from your experience? And again, going back to, and I know it's not what you see, not what you hang your hat on, but going back to you being the first female to officiate in a Super Bowl. What do you want your kids to learn?
I want my kids to learn that hard work does pay off. Don't go through life trying to do things for the recognition, though. I want you to fall in love with whatever craft it is that you're trying to master. Fall in love with it. Don't go out trying to prove people wrong. Prove to yourself that you belong. Don't do it for the recognition, because if you're only going through life to be recognized, I say you'll step on anybody's toes to get up that ladder of success, but sons, daughters, those toes you stepped on, that will be the backside you will kiss on the way down, because you will not have earned it the right way.
Yeah.
But if you're truly doing this because you love it, people will notice that. Your attitude, your demeanor, how you carry yourself, your field presence, people will be able to see that, and it'll be infectious. And it all goes back to treat others the way you want to be treated. And having that principle and that foundation and just truly believing that, it will all work itself out. Love where you are, put the work in, and let the rest take care of itself.
And the other thing that you told me when we talked before was don't let false obstacles stop you. Don't let barriers that shouldn't be there keep you from doing what you want to do.
David, that's exactly right. And I'll say that, you know, typically whenever I'm going proving people wrong, because that list of people will never end. And if you just don't look at the ones that tell you no or situations as roadblocks, but speed bumps, the quicker you get over that speed bump, put it behind you and just never want to do that again or listen to that. And look through your windshield, you know, through your windshield that is so much larger than your rearview mirror. There's so much more opportunity. But yeah, people are going to constantly tell you no, or you're not tall enough, or you're too tall, or whatever.
Yeah.
And just look at them as speed bumps, not roadblocks.
You think your kids are going to get into officiating?
I hope so. We'll sit around when we're watching a game and they'll go, "Hey, Mom, that's holding on number 68. Sure enough, here come the flag." And then I'll ask them, what did they do? And so now I'm trying to teach them, you know, a takedown or grab and restrict or hook and turn, just something like that. Yeah.
Yep.
But, you know, also, David, the other thing, too, about the speed bumps and the roadblocks is I tell them there'll be times in your life that you'll come to a fork in the road and you'll have to make a decision. And if you choose to go left, but a lot of people were telling you to go right. And once you get down that street that you turn left, and you start second guessing yourself, don't ever wish you were on the right side. Just make the best of the turn that you made.
Yeah, as the famous baseball philosopher says, when you come to a fork in the road, take it.
I have not heard that. Oh, yeah. That's good. But
yeah, take it.
You got to.
Well, I've got to admit, when I first came up with the idea of interviewing you for this podcast, I wanted to find out the person behind the first female to officiate in the Super Bowl. What I have found is that you are a charming woman, a wonderful person who just happens to be an NFL official, and the gender doesn't matter on that job. And so I've really enjoyed this. I appreciate you taking the time, and you have a great day.
David, you as well. And thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening to Sports Connections with David Smale. Make sure to subscribe, follow, and rate the show from your favorite podcast platform. You can learn more about David Smale and his work by visiting davidsmalebooks.com. Don't forget to join us weekly for new episodes. Until next time.